Hello and welcome to Volume 43, Number 43 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine, brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. This edition is published on Friday the 27th of October 2023. Hi, I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by your newsreader Margaret. And in this week's issue, we hear from the new owners of the Victoria Arcade. COVID rears its ugly head yet again, and Babette's legacy is still with us. In addition, a piece from our Julie from our online time in 2020. And what's happening in October 1958? Yes, all the details on your local news. No birthdays to report again this week, so it's over to Margaret for the news.
Hello, everybody. I'm Margaret, and I'm bringing you this week's news. Well, the rain, it raineth. A lot. My electric blanket has now come out of storage. The heating is on, but I haven't yet succumbed to my vest. And just to cap it all, British summertime ends at the weekend on Sunday. So when you go to bed on Saturday night, don't forget to put your clocks back. So enough of my rambling. So if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin with the news. And the first item is about an arrest. Police arrested 12 people for drug offences during a week-long operation. The week of action was targeted at County Line's drug dealing between October the 9th and the 15th. County Line's drug dealing involves the use of phones to facilitate the supply of Class A drugs between a major city and another county. Two arrests were made in Norwich, including a teenage boy from Suffolk who was found with Class A drugs during a stop and search in Shorncliffe Avenue in Mire Cross on October the 9th. Another man was arrested following a vehicle stop in Brazen Gate on October the 12th, during which two drug wraps, two knives and cash were seized. Both men have since been bailed. Two men in their 50s were also arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply in Yarmouth Road, Brundle, on October the 9th after a vehicle stop. They were found with 21 wraps of Class A drugs. One man was bailed and the other was released without charge. Rory Ray, 23, was arrested in White Hart Street in Thetford on October the 11th, and a number of wraps of heroin were seized. Ray, of St Edmund's Court in Thetford, was charged with possession of heroin with intent to supply. On the same day, three people were arrested after a warrant was carried out at a property on Duke Road in Galston, and 50 wraps of Class A drugs were uncovered. A man in his 40s, a woman in her 50s, and a teenage boy were all arrested and have been released under investigation. Detective Inspector Joe Minnis, County Line's lead for Norfolk Police, said, "Intensification Week is an opportunity for us to highlight the continuous effort to tackle County Line's drug supply in Norfolk and the associated violence and vulnerability. A significant amount of work went into collecting intelligence prior to the week of action, and by officers executing warrants, carrying out stop and searches, and completing safeguarding checks during the week, but that doesn't stop now. Norfolk Constabulary remains committed to tackling the issue in our county throughout the year, and will deal positively with any reports of suspected drug dealing." And asylum seekers. A local seafront hotel is to stop housing asylum seekers awaiting decisions on their immigration status. The Hotel Victoria is among 50 hotels nationally that will stop providing accommodation to asylum seekers in a new policy announced by Immigration Minister Robert Jenrick. It is said the Home Office will stop using some hotels within days, and all 50 sites by the end of January. news broke last September that the hotel on King's Road was housing or would be housing up to 50 refugees. Following concerns that other Great Yarmouth hotels would be housing asylum seekers, the Borough Council sought and won an injunction preventing further moves to do so. The injunction covered 59 hotels and sought to preserve the tourism character of the town. News that the Hotel Victoria would be among the first tranche of hotels stopped from housing asylum seekers was welcomed by the town's MP, Sir Brandon Lewis, who had strongly supported the council's legal action and lobbied the government to halt hotel accommodation for asylum seekers. Sir Brandon said, "This is a positive announcement. Great Yarmouth Conservatives led the way last year in opposing plans to use hotels to house asylum seekers in a tourist area of the town. Conservative councillors were courageous in launching a legal challenge by the Borough Council, in which they were backed by the court judge. However, that legal decision did not prevent the continued use of hotels outside the strictly defined tourism area. Since then, I've continued to lobby government ministers to end the crazy system, paying £8 million a day of taxpayers' money to fund hotel accommodation nationally, and that should be an asset for their local community." Sir Brandon said the government needed to keep processing claims efficiently and tackle the pernicious human trafficking by the boat gangs across the English Channel. Concerns have been raised that local authorities will now bear the brunt of the cost of housing asylum seekers. And this is a lovely story, it's about the bins. It's called The Big Green Beast and is focused on collecting rubbish across the Great Yarmouth area. And now the bin lorry has met the school pupil who named it in a competition to give Great Yarmouth Services fleet of 5 new refuse collection vehicles an individual name. The competition was run by Great Yarmouth Borough Council and saw Leo Fish, age 9, from Moorlands Primary Academy School in Belton win the side panel design after he had suggested his name of the Big Green Beast. Leo got up close to his creation as part of a tour the 5 bin lorries made to winning children. The other 4 winners were Ella Sinar, 11, of Great Yarmouth Charter Academy School with the name Bertie the Bin Truck, Naomi Soares Gaudrin, 8, with the name Echo Eva, and Nancy O'Leary, aged 11, with the name Dusty Pan, and Sally Longworth, 9, of Southtown Primary School, with the name Recycling Robin. The visits provided an opportunity for the pupils to experience a day in the life of a refuse worker, which included letting them inside the lorries and a demonstration of how to operate the bin lifts. Paul Wells, the Borough Council's portfolio holder for the Environment of Sustainability, Licensing and Waste, said, "We believe that educating the younger generation about responsible waste management is vital for the future of our environment. By bringing our new refuse trucks directly to the schools of the competition winners, we hope to inspire and engage youngsters in the importance of recycling and waste reduction." Great Yarmouth Services is owned by the Borough Council and started carrying out services on its behalf in April, replacing the joint venture company Great Yarmouth Borough Services Limited. A family has been left unsettled after a brick was thrown through their car window, covering their daughter's pram in glass. The incident is believed to have happened between 2:45 a.m. and 3:30 a.m. on October the 17th in Alderson Road, Great Yarmouth. Car owner Leo Cornish, 46, who lives in the area with his wife and 3 children, had to pay £135 to fix the window and was worried glass would be left in the pram and injure his daughter. He said, "We've been in this street for a year and this is the first time anything like this has happened. You get the usual stuff happening, but that's about it. He added, as this happened on our doorstep, it's made me and my family quite unsettled, being wary of where we park the car now and not knowing if it will happen again. I have three young kids, aged 2, 5 and 10, and my wife is quite upset about it as we keep having to make sure the glass is not in the baby seat. Police are investigating. And Mr. Cornish asks anyone with relevant dash cam or doorbell footage to come forward. Hickling Broads and marshes have been forced to shut after flooding from Storm Babette. The Broads and Marshes Nature Reserve has been forced to close its doors after the heavy rain. The low-lying broad was at increased risk from the extreme weather and has been left inaccessible from the flooding. The Norfolk Wildlife Trust has announced the reserve and visitor centre at Hickling will be closed until further notice, leaving one less outdoor adventure this half term. The Trust advised people to check the webpage for updates on the wildlife. A motorcyclist was injured in a head-on collision with a car in Galston. The accident happened around 5 p.m. on Monday, October the 23rd, at the crossroads between Crab Lane and Church Lane. Police arrived on the scene soon after and closed the adjacent roads while tending to the injured biker. An eyewitness reported that the motorbike, an Aprilia RS4, was damaged beyond recognition and the car bonnet was bent in half from the impact. The motorcyclist, a man in his teens, was taken to hospital with serious leg injuries. And officers would like to hear from anyone who may have witnessed the collision. It's been confirmed that the Showman's Guild is once again bringing a fun fair with rides and food stalls to Great Yarmouth from October the 25th to October the 29th. Although smaller than the traditional Easter fair, the event will be open from midday on each day and will close at roughly 10 p.m. Among the rides and attractions planned this year are waltzes, dodgems, funhouses, children's rides and the big wheel. And there will also be sweets and hot food on sale. The fair will take place on the marketplace and the car park will be closed from the evening of October the 22nd until October the 29th in preparation for the event. Brewery Plain and Fuller's Hill car parks will remain open during this time. Entry to the event will be free. A head teacher has defended his decision to make changes to Christmas nativities at a local primary school after a petition was set up online by parents. Ryan Freeman, head teacher of Moreland School, Church of England Primary Academy in Belton, told parents there will no longer be nativities for children in years 3 to 6 as part of the school's new Christmas itinerary. It led 80 parents signing a petition calling for him to reverse his decision so their children, who missed out on the pandemic, could experience what it's like to take part in the traditional festive show. Mr. Freeman said, "Christmas is a wonderful time of the year for our pupils, and to celebrate this year, we have produced a more than usual list of Christmas productions, performances, jumper days and lunches. We are in fact doing more this year to celebrate than other years. This year we have decided to ensure that all of our children can take part in a high quality production. Our smallest children in nursery, reception and year 1 and year 2 will be taking part in 4 of the classic Christmas Nativity productions. Similar to other schools, the older children will be performing in Christmas productions, which will be years 3 to 6, taking part in alfresco Christmas carol performances accompanied by fairy lights, music and Christmas in poetry and rhyme, written and performed by the pupils. We've just changed the type of performance for the older children from a nativity to a musical Christmas performance. The older children will also get to perform Christmas poems to their parents. We are proud of our Christmas itinerary, and we hope that parents will enjoy the wide range of opportunities that we have created to celebrate the Christmas season together. An application to allow residential occupation for 33 static caravans on holiday site in Haddiscoe Village has been refused. Applicant Barham Leisure Limited had an application approved in 2021 to build the static homes at the Pampas Lodge Holiday Park site. Last August, Barham Leisure then asked for the removal of condition that ensured that the static caravans are restricted to holiday use only and not to be used as permanent residential accommodation. But the Broads Authority has now refused the bid to allow for the residential occupation of the 33 caravans. The authority denied the new application to alter the use of the caravans on a number of grounds, stating that the holiday accommodation site is not suitable for permanent residents. It said the application was conflicting with the aims of sustainable development, the need to minimise travel, and the ability to encourage walking, cycling, use of public transport, and reducing reliance on cars. The planning department at the Broads Authority said that the plans would result in the loss of holiday accommodation within the Broads network, which would damage local tourism. However, the applicant argued that the change in use of the statics would provide significant economic and social benefits, as the people living in the permanently occupied caravans will spend and work locally. Barham Leisure Limited also claims that the approved application to build the static homes in 2021 already allows it to be used as second homes. They say there is no time restriction on how long the static caravans can be occupied. In theory, a retired couple could spend as much time as they wanted in the static caravan throughout the year. In fact, they could effectively be on holiday for 12 months of the year. It is therefore difficult to understand what advantage there would be to the local planning authority in retaining condition 4 of the planning permission. Haddiscoe Parish Council and Norfolk Highways formally objected to the plans, listing a number of safety concerns.
Thanks, Margaret. More news coming shortly. First, though, another in the series where we look back at our online-only period in 2020. This week in 2020, Julie was revelling in the delights of nature.
Now, if you've heard any of my previous chats, by now you will gather I'm a great nature lover, enjoying nothing more than totally absorbing myself, gazing upon our beautiful country and seaside areas in this, our special part of England's green and pleasant land, as we sing in that rousing hymn, Jerusalem. I revel in getting mucky, growing my own produce and sharing crops with friends. Actually, that's half the fun. All sorts emerge from my tunnels and plots, each lovingly and laboriously tended. How is it, though, that Mother Nature produces such wonderful seasonal goodies without human intervention? No pruning or fertilising, yet year after year, there they are. What would Christmas be, for instance, without those sprigs of holly? Its red berries and dark green, glossy, prickly leaves laying across on mantelpieces, not forgetting pure white berries of mistletoe suspended from the ceiling or above a door, under which that traditional kiss has become the beginning of many a lasting romance. The same with flowers. Bluebells and snowdrops pop up, carpeting our woodland floors in spring. Our meadowland, mushrooms of all shapes and sizes, some edible, others poisonous, squishy blackberries, plump, purple, small plum bullaces, their golden cousins, mirabelles, and yellowish crab apples growing in clusters, flanked by light green serrated oval leaves, to name but a few. Yellow buttercups, little white daisies with their tiny, dense, spiky petals and almost orange centres appear overnight through summer in grassland, even if it has been freshly mown. Bright yellow broom and similar but spiteful gorse adorns hedgerows and heathland. Lacy-headed, creamy-coloured cow parsley towers above pretty pink campion trumpet blooms, yellow cowslips, vivid blue cornflowers with their unique petal formation are just a minuscule amount of species festooning roadside verges. Riverbanks, ponds and streams sport tall, brown, cylindrical-shaped velvety heads of bulrushes alongside feathery silver reeds rustling in the breeze, beneath which yellow marsh irises are proud favourites to that most beautiful of insects, dragonflies and the iridescent blue damselflies. Come with me now to the fields where poppies, sometimes dotted about singularly or in masses, intermingle amongst wheat, oats and barley, despite the farmers' attempts to curtail their growth with weed killers. They are not weeds, just glorious scarlet, delicately petalled flowers showing off their defiance, appearing each even more vibrant within the ears of golden wavering corn. To top all of that wonderment, each species has its own unique texture and perfume. We as mere humans cannot in any way emulate such perfection. Doesn't that make you feel humble? I certainly do. As I write, I'm gazing out at my shrubbery. Some would call it a lazy gardener's corner, but I have left nature to perform its own miracles, keeping pruning shears stowed well away as an experiment. Oh wow, what a fabulous result! They have all intertwined branches, colours which in no way would we put together in a fabric to wear, just seem to enhance each other with such vibrance and beauty. Reds and oranges and pinks, for instance, all blending in an enchanting way against a shiny green and variegated three-pointed leafed ivy black drop. Nothing clashes. Why not? I've never been able to work that one out. At present, the weather is dreadful. I'm finding it impossible to believe that only 2 days ago, whilst hedging, wishing I was splashing about in a cool sea or on a beach somewhere instead of perspiring buckets, topping by an average of 6 feet gangly headlands, hauling, raking and chipping, we were blessed with what? Tropical temperatures in excess of 26 degrees. Oh my word, definitely too hot for manual work like that. But needs must, and extremely grateful I am too for making the effort, as today is like another country. Jolly cold, wind speeds of 50 miles an hour plus, accompanied by almost horizontal rain, which is absolutely lashing it down. Garden furniture and other loose items are blowing around all over the place. But there they are. My beautiful sunflowers have stoically turned their backs to the prevailing wind direction, standing firm against the elements. And the shrubs are wavering around, seemingly enjoying the power shower. Only upside I can see at present is that my sun lounge hasn't been so clean for ages. The sound is deafening as tons of water is wasting no time noisily hurling itself onto the transparent polycarbonate roof. It's like being inside a kettle drum, but an incredible sight as it torrents uncontrollably down the glass like a waterfall, gutters unable to cope with the force. Oh no, it can't be. Sadly, yes it is. Time to deliver a birthday present now. Hey ho, nothing for it but to grab my waterproof coat and trousers, pull on my trusty wellies and go for it. Not exactly a picture of sartorial elegance, I can assure you. Battling with the door against the wind, I brave it. In those famous words of the great Antarctic explorer, Captain Lawrence Oates, I may be some time.
Woke up one morning half asleep with all my blankets in a heap and yellow roses scattered all around. The time was still approaching for I couldn't stand it anymore. So Mary goes upon my eider down. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the rain. Feel the power of the rain making the garden grow. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the rain.
The first record played on BBC Radio 1, if anyone's interested, but in honour of Julie in the Rain. Flowers in the Rain from The Move. OK, back to Margaret for some more news, followed closely by her look at what we were up to in 1958.
The launch of the Great Yarmouth Poppy Appeal to raise funds for the Royal British Legion takes place this week. Poppy sellers launch their annual poppy appeal at the Covered Marketplace on Thursday the 26th of October at 10:55 a.m. This event is the first of several in the town to mark the sacrifices people from the borough have made during both world wars and other conflicts. The annual Blessing of the Crosses ceremony will take place on Wednesday, November the 8th at the Cenotaph in St George's Park, from 10:55 a.m. The ceremony will be led by Reverend Canon Simon Ward and allow people to place their crosses with the names of servicemen and women who lost their lives during the war written on them in the memorial area. The borough's Remembrance Sunday service will take place at the War Memorial in St George's Park on Sunday, November the 12th. The parade marshals and youth organisations will march to St George's Park at 10:35 a.m. and people are invited to gather at 10:50 a.m. with a 2-minute silence at 11 a.m. Then at 12:30 p.m. Reverend Pauline Simpson, Chaplain and Secretary / Welfare Officer for the Far East Prison of War Association, will be holding a seafront service. The service will take place at the Far East Prisoner of War Association Memorial on Marine Parade. Attendees asked to arrive at 12:20 p.m. for a 12:30 p.m. start. Mayor of Great Yarmouth, Penny Carpenter, and a representative from the Royal British Legion will both lay wreaths. She said, "We invite residents to join us in commemorating these events, remembering those who have fallen in battle and pay their respects. The Royal British Legion, which has supported the armed forces community since 1921, and Reverend Albert Cadmore, Mayor's Chaplain, will attend all the remembrance events. A road safety banner has been given to a Yarmouth Town Centre school to remind parents and carers not to park there during drop-off and pick-up times. The banner for St Nicholas Priory Primary School has been provided by Great Yarmouth Police with the support of a donation by Martham-based Perfect Pixel Media. It follows concerns over parking issues at the school and urges parents and carers to park in the Marketplace car park instead of dropping and picking up their children right by the school gates. A statement from Great Yarmouth Police said, "Parking issues around school drop-off pick-up times are a common concern and not one that's easily resolved. However, we had a small win in the town centre recently. PCs Sills and Chusonis, with a kind donation from Claire at Perfect Pixel Media Martham, were able to secure a banner for St Nicholas Primary CEVA Primary School to display outside to increase the safety of everyone leaving and entering the school at busy times. Live music in Great Yarmouth is set to be boosted by a major collaboration, which is new. Up-and-coming bands and musicians from the region are set to be elevated to new levels with a series of gigs presented by Giggy, that's Gigs Great Yarmouth, at the Drill Hall. Giggy is a partnership between Norwich Arts Centre, Out There and Freshly Grated, which all share a vision to celebrate Great Yarmouth's music scene. Throughout autumn, 12 of the best emerging local talents will be showcased. Marcin Rodwell, Communications and Audience Development Manager of Out There Arts, said, "Giggy is set to breathe new life into Great Yarmouth's music scene through showcasing a wave of fresh talent. We're excited to be building on these relationships with Norwich Arts Centre and Freshly Grated for the benefit of Great Yarmouth's cultural scene. The lineup includes a variety of genres, with Vieira and the Silvers, a five-piece garage slash psychedelic band from Norwich, kicking things off on Friday, October the 27th. The gigs will also feature Arthur Black, a young musician from Suffolk, with an impressive 220,000 YouTube subscribers. Pasco Kevlin, director of Norwich Arts Centre, added, "It's all about encouraging and supporting the future of the live music scene for artists and the town. The partnership is about pooling our strengths and supporting each other to build a music community. The organisers are encouraging out-of-town visitors to experience the live music events in Great Yarmouth for under £10. Groups of 3 to 9 adults travelling via Greater Anglia receive a third off their fare with the Group Save Initiative. Combined with a £3 ticket option for Giggy, visitors can enjoy a night out for under £10. All tickets booked in advance also receive a 10% discount from the Drill Hall Bar. The debut will be followed by 3 gigs taking place on November the 10th, the 17th and the 24th. And Giggy are implementing Pay What You Can tickets from £3 to £12 to make the gigs as affordable as possible." Well, this is a weird story. A dotted line of bright lights was seen in Norfolk skies last Tuesday night. Eagle-eyed East Anglians spotted the unusual spectacle across the county, with some speculating about aliens and asteroids. Oh my word. But it wasn't anything otherworldly. The line of more than 20 individual lights came from Elon Musk's SpaceX Starlink satellites, SpaceX began launching satellite Starlinks in 2019. Its aim is to provide internet coverage to the most rural parts of the world by sending thousands of small satellites into orbit. The satellites beam down broadband signals to areas without strong cable connections. It's currently being used in UK government trials to connect areas without strong internet connections. Digital Secretary Michelle Donlan said last year, "Ensuring everyone can get the quality internet connection is crucial to our levelling up plans, and those trials aim to find a solution to the prohibitively high cost of rolling out cables to far-flung locations." Musk's project launched in 2019, and by August 2023, there were around 5,000 in the skies. Starlink satellites can be seen with the naked eye, but it's not always as clear as the most recent sightings. The probes are easiest to glimpse within a day or two of their launch. When the satellites reach the intended height of 342 miles above the ground, they become much more tricky to spot. The satellites were particularly visible over Norfolk last Tuesday as they travelled from south, west to east. What a weird story. Campaigners battling to scrap plans to dig a massive quarry in their village say the company behind the scheme has deliberately delayed providing information on the project to thwart their fight. Worried locals have already spent £5,000 on legal teams to halt the scheme and have raised concerns the deadline for approval has been drawn out to make it harder and more expensive for them to pursue. If the plans do go through, a 52-acre quarry, roughly 26 football pitches, will be constructed in Haddiscoe, a village with a population of just 500 people. Villagers have set up a Stop It Too campaign, which represents around 80% of the community, to halt the plans. The group have turned on the company behind the scheme, fearing it is purposely attempting to cause delay, to wait out the Secretary of State signing off on an emerging materials and waste policy, which the site has been put forward for. If the policy is approved, it will make it easier for Breedon Trading, the company behind the project, to develop. And now, after months of delays and pressure from this paper, the company has finally supplied information about the project requested by Norfolk County Council, NCC. A spokesman for Breedon said, "We can confirm, in accordance with Regulation 25, that a report was submitted on Friday, October the 20th, which seeks to respond to all the issues that have been raised. We will continue to engage with Norfolk County Council and all relevant stakeholders. Furthermore, we would welcome the opportunity to share our further submissions with the Parish Council directly." Plans for the quarry, which would sit on Manor Farm next to Crab Apple Lane, were first unveiled at the end of last year. Since then, the developers repeatedly put back providing information requested by NCC, which would decide the application. Breedon is a supplier of concrete and cement and operates 350 sites in the UK. The quarry would be used to extract gravel for local construction projects, possibly including the dualling of the A47 and the Norwich Western Link Road. Locals argue the scheme would be too close to homes and bring dust, noise and extra traffic. They add that some in the village will be living within 55 metres of the proposed quarry. NCC asked for more information on a variety of topics, including what mitigation was planned to limit the impact on highways, public rights of way and trees, as well as the submission of a health impact assessment. A deadline of June the 30th was initially set by NCC to get the information, which was then pushed back to mid-August. Daryl Packer, a former mining engineer and member of Stop It 2, said, "We are getting really frustrated about the length of time it's taking. It has been strung out, which adds to the frustration and worry that I and the village have. It has already cost us a huge amount of money." In their fight against the scheme, neighbours have come together to hire lawyers to represent them. "We are worried that the reason for the delay is that they want to see the mineral policy signed off by the Secretary of State," Mr. Packer said. "The current policy doesn't have the land in it. If it gets signed off, then that is what the County Council will work with for the next 15 years, and it becomes a lot more difficult for us to fight. We are frustrated at how long Breedon is taking, and we are frustrated at Norfolk County Council allowing this extension. It's in their power to throw this out." A Norfolk County Council spokeswoman said, "In accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework, we are working proactively with the applicant and have agreed to their request for further time to submit the information. This is to ensure that we are able to make a robust decision based on all relevant information available. We require the additional information, which relates to impacts on highway safety, public rights of way, ecology, public health and amenities, to be submitted by the end of this month. Once we have the information, it will be consulted on for 30 days, and if no further issues arise, the application will go to the next available planning committee for a decision. This is not the first time the community has had to fight quarries planned in the village. The original Stop It campaign spent years fighting against a proposal that was ultimately turned down in 2014. Villagers said that the scheme had cost them around £20,000 in legal fees. The rejected plans put forward by another company were larger in scale. They included a second field next to Haddiscoe's 11th century St Mary's Church and envisaged a 21-year operating period with a processing plant on site. The presently proposed scheme does not involve an on-site processing plant, with the extracted gravel expected to be taken 4 miles away by HGV to a quarry at Norton Subcourse. In March, locals were also hit with plans for a second quarry in the village, which was ultimately withdrawn by the developer Landhall Developments Limited. That scheme would have seen a 16-acre site east of Wiggs Road filled with soil and debris from construction and demolition projects. Well, I've been meandering through the pages of the Mercury of many, many years ago and taking you right back in time to November 1958. And the first item that caught my eye concerned the moving of the public house, the Anson Arms, from one side of the road to another on the corner of Gordon Road. It used to be the home of the late Mr. A. Castle and was bought by Stewart and Patterson in 1945. The building had been used as a temporary office for their employees and the ground floor by pupils of the Technical High School. Originally built in 1814 for Paget's Brewery, research by the licensee Mr. L. Baxter showed it was first acquired by Stewart and Patterson from the Earl of Lichfield's trustees in 1883. The builders employed on the new public house were Holmes and Holmes. And from something opening to something closing. The headline was, "No Sunday opening of post office in winter. Sunday morning opening in Yarmouth's head post office is to be discontinued from the new year. It will close during January and May and October and December." And this is about the herring season no longer with us, I'm afraid. Now, there was a good landing yesterday. To the 1,200 crans landed at Yarmouth yesterday, the drifters working from the port added another 920 crans. Rose Bay, the local steam drifter, which is the provisional winner of last week's herringboard competition, had 70 crans. The herrings were of good quality, but many were small. And fog and mist did not delay the drifters, and the weather improved during the morning. Opposition to prison plan for Blunderston. After hearing details of a £1 million proposal to build a security prison in the grounds at Blunderston Lodge, a parish meeting at Oulton decided to oppose the scheme. If the prison commission decided to go ahead with the scheme, despite local opposition, plans will take about a year to prepare, and work is unlikely to begin 1960/61. Prisoners would be secured in individual cells, and no psychopathic or sexual offenders would be held there. There would be a wall of 12 foot surrounded by an electrified perimeter fence patrolled by dogs. Now, strange to think that plans went ahead all those years ago and now it's been pulled down for housing anyway. So there we go. And this next item concerned the death of Father Stephen Webb. Now, he was a parish priest at St Mary's Catholic Church. He came to Yarmouth just after the war and was responsible for opening chapels at Caister, Hemsby and Acle, which enabled country people to attend Mass on Sundays. Now, I can remember the small chapel on Caister Road, it's long since demolished, as I used to attend there. And my parents, young brother and I all cycled from Newtown in all weathers. In fact, my brother Michael was a very young altar server there, complete with highly polished shoes and bill-creamed hair. Oh dear, those were the days. Over 400 people attended the funeral, and schoolchildren from St Mary's and St Louis Convent lined the route from St Mary's Church to Deanside as the cortege passed. And I was one of those schoolchildren, complete with the convent school uniform, black felt hat, navy mac, polished shoes, and the gym slip, of course. Now, on a lighter note, Montgomery Clift and Elizabeth Taylor starred in Raintree County at the Coliseum, and at the ABC, Elizabeth Taylor again in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Now, if you wanted home entertainment, you could go into a booth at Woolsey and Woolsey and listen to your record before you bought it, and then go home and play it on a stereophonic record play for 20 guineas from Norfolk Radio. Now, that was how I spent many happy Saturday afternoon with my friends. And what else could you buy way back in 1958? Bachelor's tipped cigarettes, 1 8 pence for 10 or 20 for 3 4 pence. And because Christmas was approaching, Father Christmas was due to arrive in his grotto in Palmer's on November the 29th. Lucky dip, 6 pence. Barwell's in King Street were selling bottles of choice ruby port for 14 and 6 pence, South African sherry for 12 and 6 pence, and cognac for 42 shillings. Now, I had to smile at this one. To finish with, hula hooping helps housewives keep fit. Hula hooping, the current craze among children and teenagers, has now spread to housewives. Hula hooping keep fit classes are now being held in St Peter's Hall, Yarmouth, and the Station Hotel Galston by Miss Joy Manser. The reporter said, "It's much more difficult than I imagined. The idea is to hold the hoop against your back and pull it round, then sway backwards and forwards to keep it going. After 10 minutes, the ribs begin to ache." That's enough of that. Brings me out in a sweat anyway. Right, now what were we listening to way back in November 1958? We had It's Only Make Believe, Conway Twitty, what a lovely name. Tom Dooley, the Kingston Trio, and It's All in the Game, Tommy Edwards. Oh, my lost youth.
Throughout history, there have been many songs written about the Eternal Triangle. This next one tells the story of a Mr. Grayson, a beautiful woman, and a condemned man named Tom Dooley. When the sun rises tomorrow, Tom Dooley must hang. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Poor boy, you're bound to die. I met her on the mountain. There I took her life. Met her on the mountain. Stabbed her with my knife. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Poor boy, you're bound to die. This time tomorrow, reckon where I'll be. Hadn't it been for Grayson, I'd have been in Tennessee.
Well now, boy,
hang down your head,
Dooley. Hang down your head and cry.
Oh boy, oh,
hang down your head,
Dooley.
Oh boy, you're bound to die.
Oh well now, boy,
hang down.
This time tomorrow, reckon where I'll be. Down in some lonesome valley, hanging from a white oak tree. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Poor boy, you're bound to die.
Oh well now, boy,
hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Hang down your head and cry.
Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Poor boy, you're bound to die. Poor boy, you're bound to die. Poor boy, you're bound to die. Poor boy, you're bound to die.
The Kingston Trio with Tom Dooley, number 5 in the charts, but at the same time they were competing with Brit Lonnie Donegan's version, which reached number 3. Right, it's time to get you completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
It was the storm Hemsby had braced itself for. And although the crumbling coastline survived Storm Babette's first overnight onslaught, locals knew the worst was yet to come over the weekend. On Friday, their homes, which are perilously perched on the dune edge, crept ever closer to the North Sea. Tidal surges fuelled by gale-force winds of 50 miles per hour battered the coastline over the weekend, as Storm Babette swept through the region. About 4 metres of the coastline was claimed by the sea on the north side of Hemsby Gap, with thousands of tonnes of sand from the beach being lost to high tides. Independent lifeboat coxswain Daniel Hurd, who patrolled the beach during the worst of the storm, said it's no longer a matter of if, but when the Beach Road lifeboat station will have to be relocated. One more storm with a northeasterly wind could finish us, Mr. Hurd said. The storm and high tides claimed 3 to 4 metres of the dunes and thousands of tonnes of sand over the weekend. We're still losing the dune face, and we fear it will get to the car park at the lifeboat station if we get another storm like Babette. We're really concerned. The volunteer lifeboat crew had to desperately rebuild the sand slipway used to get the boat from the station to the sea, as high tides threatened to wash it away. The storm came in the same week that Hemsby found out it would not receive government funding for sea defences to protect the village. The plans hoped for 0.8 miles, 1.3 kilometres, of rock berm at a cost of £15 million, but a joint statement from Great Yarmouth Borough Council, Coastal Partnership East, the council's coastal management team, Great Yarmouth MP Sir Brandon Lewis and Norfolk County Council said the cost would be significantly higher. The statement also said that the village did not have enough threatened homes to warrant the funding. Ian Brennan, Treasurer and former Chairman of Campaign Group Save Hemsby Coastline, SHC, said the villagers felt abandoned by the government. "It was devastating news, and there's a lot of anger and sadness in the village," Mr. Brennan said. 3 years ago, a study said 92 homes and several businesses will be lost in the next 25 years if we do nothing. In the 3 years since, 6 homes have been lost and another 5 are hanging by a thread. Lorna Bevan, a trustee of SHC, who owns the Lake and Arms pub in Seaview Road, had said the funding decision was utterly disrespectful to locals. Resident Kevin Jordan, 70, who has lived in his home on the Marams for 14 years, said he lives in fear of his house being next. The Marams is one of Hemsby's most vulnerable sections of coastline, with the boundary of Mr. Jordan's home sitting precariously just 5 metres from the sea. He said his house shakes when the sea crashes against the dunes and was anxious about the whole erosion situation. Hemsby also lost several metres of its coastline over the previous weekend before the storm. Earlier this year, the beach entrance by Hemsby Gap was closed due to erosion, which saw a halt in offshore call-outs for the Independent Lifeboat, a home being moved away from the cliff edge and several homes demolished. Sir Brandon Lewis MP has been accused of having brought shame on his constituency after taking a 7th job advising a company partly owned by 2 sanctioned Russian oligarchs. Sir Brandon, the MP for Great Yarmouth, is set to join investment firm Letter One as a senior advisor, the latest in a string of lucrative roles for the politician. The company was founded by billionaires Mikhail Fridman and Peter Avon, who were placed on the UK's sanctions list following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. While Letter One has restructured itself to comply with sanctions, the businessmen still own 49% of the shares. And this is not the first time Sir Brandon's ties to Russian oligarchs have raised eyebrows, with some high-profile donors bankrolling him in recent years. Labour has hit out at Mr. Lewis over the latest role. Keir Cousins, Labour's candidate for Great Yarmouth, said, "Brandon Lewis has proved once again that he has no shame. He has long been bankrolled by Russian money and now adds his 7th part-time job at a company set up and still partly owned by 2 sanctioned Russian oligarchs. To be taking this money at a time of war when our own country continues to stand proudly with Ukraine is indefensible. Any other MP would have resigned long ago. His contempt for our constituency and the people who live here can no longer be tolerated. Every day Brandon Lewis clings to office, all he does is bring further shame and neglect. Great Yarmouth deserves better." Sir Brandon has been contacted for comment. The latest role is expected to earn the former government cabinet member in the low hundreds of thousands of pounds, but his exact pay has not been revealed. Sir Lewis already holds 3 paid jobs, earning him £150,000, in addition to the £86,584 he gets for being an MP. In comparison, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is entitled to claim around £160,791 each year for being Prime Minister. Sir Brandon's roles include 2 £60,000 a year gigs with property developer Fakem Homes and infrastructure firm FM Conway. For each of these companies, he works 8 hours per month. He also makes £30,000 a year as a consultant for Civitas Investment Management. This is for 4 hours work each month. In addition, he is a director of Woodland Schools, a private schools group based more than 100 miles away from Great Yarmouth, for which he waived payment but receives the use of a company car valued at £10,000. Sir Brandon has also become an unpaid patron of the right-wing Adam Smith Institute, which has previously criticised a crackdown on MPs' second jobs. The number of jobs Sir Brandon has accepted may sting for locals in Great Yarmouth, with around 2,000 people aged 16 and over unemployed in March this year, a rate of 4.8%. Donations to Sir Brandon have been criticised in the past, with him receiving almost £50,000 from Russian oligarchs between 2014 and 2022. The money came from Lugov, Shonukin and Alexander Tomurko, who are both now British citizens. Ms. Shonukin has Russian parents, and Ukrainian-born Tomurko lived and worked in Russia before fleeing the country in 2004. There is no suggestion of impropriety relating to the donations. The appointment to Letter 1 has been cleared by the government's Independent Advisory Committee on Business Appointments, which vets job applications by former ministers to avoid conflicts of interest. Talking to the Financial Times about the second job, Sir Lewis said, "Letter 1 has travelled a huge distance since Putin's abhorrent invasion of Ukraine. It is now fully separate from its sanctioned founders and focused on investments that are vital for society, as well as being one of the biggest corporate donors of aid to Ukraine." And an item now about the Victoria Arcade. The latest owners of the Victoria Arcade in Great Yarmouth are planning to invest £60,000 in the neglected building after buying it at an auction last month. Modern Design and Developments Limited are organising a grand reopening event on October the 31st, which is promising live comedy and music, as well as Halloween-themed events, including pumpkin carving. In recent years, Victoria Arcade, which was once a popular destination for shoppers in the town, has fallen on hard times due to an overall decline in footfall on the high street. Currently, 18 units are occupied, while 22 are empty. Hoping to turn those fortunes around, the new landlords are promising 6 months rent-free for local businesses willing to try out new ideas at the shopping precinct. A spokesperson said, "We want to get local people involved. And if after those 6 months the business has been successful, they can keep going." The company is hoping that one end will become a food court with cafes, bakeries and bubble tea, while the other will have independent shops. The owners will also repaint the building and repair bird netting in efforts to rebrand the arcade. The spokesperson said, "If you see a neglected building, you think it is a failed business. So the main challenge we might face is getting the trust back from the local community." The Victoria Arcade was originally built in 1925 and opened the following year as the Central Arcade. It was modernised in 1987 and renamed the Victoria Arcade. The arcade has passed hands many times in history. In 2015, it sold for £1 million at auction. In 2017, HIS Investments paid £800,000 before putting the shopping centre back on the market last year for £700,000. Modern Design and Developments Limited bought the arcade for approximately £650,000. And more news about the storm that we had at the weekend. areas of Norfolk remain underwater after flooding in the wake of Storm Babette. Aerial photographs taken this week show the extent of the flooding at Hickling and Martham, with large areas of the marshland still submerged. Storm Babette swept through the region last week and over the weekend, bringing heavy rain and gale force winds. Streets flooded, causing Norfolk's two busiest roads, the A47 and the A11, to close. Trees were blown over and schools were forced to close, with several weekend events cancelled. Thousands of homes lost power, and some residents reported being trapped in their homes as the storm closed in. The east was particularly badly hit by Storm Babette as strong winds prevailed from an east to southeasterly direction from Europe. Norfolk was worst hit on Friday, October the 20th, with the coastline being battered by tidal surges and 60 miles per hour winds. Flooding was worse in Suffolk, however, where a major incident was declared. The town of Framlingham became impassable after Framlingham Mere overflowed, with cars entirely submerged by the flooding. One care home in the area saw the floodwaters rise to the ground floor windows. Great Yarmouth has been revealed as the country's current COVID hotspot, with more cases per head than any other area in England and Wales. The latest figures from the UK Health Security Agency, the government's health protection body, show a total of more than 12,000 new cases of the disease were recorded in England in the week up to October the 14th. This follows an uptick in recent cases caused by the new Parola variant, which is prompting fears of a twindemic as the country heads into winter, with the NHS resuming its booster jab drive for vulnerable adults. According to the agency's data, Great Yarmouth is the current COVID hotspot, with more than double the national rate of cases at 54.4 per 100,000. James Paget Hospital in Galston continues to operate normally, with no requirements for face masks or public use PPE. While overall case numbers are down, infection rates in Norfolk have seen a sharp rise in recent months. In September, a Norfolk care home found itself the epicentre of a Parola outbreak. Shipton Manor near Dereham confirmed that of the 34 recorded cases of the variant in the UK at that time, 28 had been detected at the home. This meant that 82% of all cases in the country were at the site. A Great Yarmouth pub, popular with real ale lovers, said it is still open for business after the premises sold at an auction. The Mariner's Tavern in Howard Street South sold for £130,000 at an auction last month. A statement from the pub said it is still open, but the last day for its current team will be on October the 28th. And it said that the new owners will then continue its real ale ethos. A statement on the pub's Facebook page said, "There seems to be a lot of doubt circulating as to whether we're still open, and just to dispel any rumours, we are still trading. The current team remain at the pub until the end of the month, and we still have a great range of real ale and ciders. Our last day will be Saturday the 28th of October. The pub has been sold and the new owners intend to continue as a real ale pub. The pub first opened in the 1830s, and in 2010 it bagged the Norwich and Norfolk Campaign for Real Ales Branch Pub of the Year Award. Great Yarmouth Borough Councillor Daniel Candon has launched the Bradwell North Crime Survey following concerns raised about isolated crime and antisocial behaviour in the village. The survey aims to boost collaboration between the council, police and people living in the village by bringing in targeted strategies that address potential challenges and build a safer environment for everyone. Mr. Candon said, "As a councillor, it is always important to listen to the views of local constituents. At time, residents share with me and the colleagues their worries about isolated incidents of crime and antisocial behaviour in specific places of North Bradwell. I want to get a true understanding of the feelings in the community and share this intelligence with the local police authority and Great Yarmouth Borough Council." The survey will collect data on residents' perceptions of safety, concerns related to crime and antisocial behaviour, and their suggestions for improvement. Local Bradwell resident Hilary Hale said, "Bradwell is generally a safe place to live, but we do have pockets of antisocial behaviour in the north of the village, particularly around the Mill Lane playing field and the community centre. Vandalism of play equipment is horrible to see, along with illegal e-scooter use on the pavements. I'm pleased to see Councillor Candon seeking views from the community on such an important topic." Earlier this year, police made a public appeal following thefts from garages and vehicles in Bradwell. At the most recent Safer Neighbourhood Action Panel meeting, Norfolk Constabulary announced they were prioritising tackling antisocial behaviour in the village's green spaces. The Bradwell North Crime Survey can be accessed online at www.danielcandon.org.uk/Bradwell-North-Crime-Survey and is available to all residents who live in the ward of Bradwell North.
Well, that's it for this week's recording, which is copyright 2023 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. If you need to contact us, you can do so via our website at grapevinegy.org or telephone us on 07947 946 493, where you can access our regularly checked answering service. Next week, your newsreader will be Andrew, so we look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.